And here we go. So we've had some wonderful surprise guests. Last week it was Alan Jones. We've had Alexander Volkanovsky. We've had Anthony Field, the Blue Wiggle. Yep. And Brian, it is your turn to shine.
Okay, so well said. It's quite funny when you say shine because this gentleman was the boss. He was the CEO of Shine. Endemol Shine Australia, which was, do you know where you're going, when I'm going?
I know. I sat next to this wonderful champion man on a flight back from Canberra once upon a time.
So you know who it is, so you're not ruining him. Well, I'm going to give him a bit of an introduction. So MasterChef, Australian Ninja Warrior, Lego Masters, and MAFS. That was the clue books he played. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Mark Fennessy, thank you for joining the show. Mark.
Good afternoon, guys. How are you going?
I'm going very, very well. So we have a surprise guest every week, and now you're my surprise guest. So thank you for joining us. Now, Mark, sorry,
yes, mate.
No, it's all right. Fenno, first of all, mm-hmm. when you go and choose a show, i.e., like MasterChef, how do you know to go? How do you know what's going to succeed? Because what succeeds overseas doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work over here. What do you look for?
Well, look, our programmers here are sort of look fairly reactive, I mean that in a kind of flattering way to what is kind of popping in the US and the UK predominantly. I mean, our trends follow theirs and they tend to be a little bit ahead of us. So, that's a pretty good indication. 9 times out of 10, if something works in the US and the UK, it works here. It's almost bankable that it will. So, there's a lot of focus on that. I'm constantly looking at trends in those particular territories. A lot of the networks, let's talk about them specifically because streamers are different again. But the networks are so busy with kind of dealing with what's in front of them today a lot of the time that they don't necessarily always have huge amounts of time and opportunities to look well ahead of the curve. Now, they do have agents, their own agents in these particular larger territories. But a lot of the independent producers, myself included, are fairly heavily focused on what trends are emerging and what shows are popping in other territories, predominantly the UK and the US, but not exclusively those.
We're chatting with Mark Fennessy, absolute royalty when it comes to television. Now, Mark, sometimes we get it wrong, and that's for a good reason, where you maybe understated something. You thought you got hold of a program and you thought, it might go okay, it'll pay for itself. And all of a sudden, bang, it goes berserk. What would be one of those shows that completely surprised you?
Oh, look there was a couple of ones some years ago that wouldn't be so obvious. Things like there was a show called The Choir of Hard Knocks that was on the ABC. This was back sort of at the back end of Crackerjack, I think, early Fremantle media days. So we're talking 10, 12 years ago now, probably even a bit more. But that just completely exploded, and it was knocking over 60 Minutes. And it was a kind of unique show about homeless people basically forming. They basically became a choir under this an amazing conductor, and it really became this incredible sort of uplifting sort of experience for people who were going through a hard sort of time of their lives, I suppose. And it really just took off. That was one of them. Others that you kind of expected to do well, things like The Voice, obviously. But there were shows like So You Think You Can Dance. There was Project Runway. Triple Zero Heroes we did at Fremantle. That went gangbusters. So there's been a few along the way. I mean, they're not all like that, obviously. And it's great when you have a surprising sort of hit. I mean, you always hope for it. You always kind of like sort of expect it, but some exceed your expectations and they're always kind of quite joyous moments.
Fenno, you just mentioned there about the streaming services. So the boom of Netflix and Stan and all Amazon and all that sort of stuff, is that a hindrance now to you or is it a opportunity?
No, it's definitely an opportunity, Fletcher. Look, certainly everyone's lives have kind of changed and all so much. We're living such busy lives, everybody is. Streaming, was really, it's part technology and also part viewing habits at the same time. I mean, the technology is going ahead in leaps and bounds. Ultimately, the thing with streaming is we want to be able to watch things when it suits us, as opposed to network TV where you have to see it at this particular time. And streaming is definitely an opportunity for independent producers because it's another platform, another form of content available. You know, we're limited in terms of independent producers in this market because on any given day, you've probably only got five buyers. In the US, you've probably got 65. The streamers coming in, whilst, you know, they're not buying a huge amount of Australian content yet, because we are such a heavy subscription market. Not a lot of Australian-made content travels internationally, which some of it does, but not all of it does. So, you know, we are very much a subscriber market first to your Netflix and Amazons of this world, and probably less so an exporter, you know, in the first degree. But definitely, they're definitely a new form of content, so it's definitely an opportunity.
Whenever, like the shopping centres, I suppose, and in Australia we've got, you know, Woolies and Coles primarily, a little bit of Aldi, etc. But we have a lot of streaming services out there at the moment. Like, you look at your bank statement, they're coming out for Binge and they're coming out for Netflix and Stan, and the list goes on, and in the sporting subscriptions as well. Do you see a big consolidation coming up within time?
Yeah, I think definitely, Joel. I think at one stage, I believe Foxtel tried to be an aggregator for a lot of the platforms, but there are going to be more streaming services, and they're going to be more and more demands for, you know, what becomes $8 a month isn't much, but suddenly when you've got 6 or 10 of them, and that will happen very quickly. A lot of services, I think most people would know that when they get an app for free, if it's popular in 2 years, it'll suddenly cost you $2 a month, $5 a month, and people go, oh, well, that's not much, you know, and then suddenly you realize one day you're still getting direct debited because you don't know how to get off. You know, I remember when my little kids were loved the penguin animated penguins, and I was trying to contact the company that were billing me for them 3 years later when they'd well and truly outgrown it. So I think there will be, to your question, there will be a point of aggregation whereby certain, you will be able to get certain packages, I suppose, that might include, okay, Netflix will amalgamate with Apple TV or Amazon, so you'll pay one amount that might be a little bit cheaper than what you'd pay for it on its own, and you'll get three of them, you know, for the same, for a combined price. I think that has to happen. There's more coming. There's a US domestic service called Hulu, H-U-L-U, and that's going international very soon, so that'll be in our market fairly soon. And you're going to have more and more and more of them. So, yes, aggregation has to happen at some point. It just makes sense for people. Otherwise, you can't keep track of how many subscriptions that you've got, and you can't have all of them. There'll be a point whereby it's just not practical or affordable for a lot of people to have, you know, 20 subscriptions a month.
Fano, the number one show on Netflix around the world is Squid Game.
Oh, yeah.
If someone came to you 5 years ago and said, Fano, I've got this game, I've got this show, it's going to be dubbed, it's going to be dubbed really bad. They're just going to wear tracksuits with white shoes, and they're going to get shot in the head if you don't lick a little bit of a biscuit. Would you turn around and go, mate, this, you're off your head? Why does it work? Why does Squid Game work?
I think because it's a bit shocking.
Yeah.
And, you know, it certainly, one thing, Fletcher, is that the audience is looking for something different, you know. And this, we get fed so much stuff that's derivative or that is more of the same, you know. And there is a habit, particularly networks are guilty of this much more than the streamers. It's give them what they know. Mm. And that's why we've got so many damn dating shows and so many cooking shows. It's all the one sort of stuff, you know. But then also in our market in particular, they don't want to take a risk on something that isn't proven because there's no appetite for non-success anymore. Once upon a time, it was like, okay, let's give this a try and, oh, well, it didn't work. Well, if a show doesn't work now, a blame game goes on. The media reports it like you've introduced bird flu into the marketplace. So there's this reactivity towards non-success. But a show like Squid Game is, well, I'm not sure 5 years ago whether necessarily anyone would have commissioned it. It's quite controversial. It's quite sort of shocking. And sort of in an addictive nature. The more shocking it is, the more addictive it kind of becomes. The dubbing is atrocious, I agree with you. And I don't think the translation into English in a lot of the the dialogue, you know, is very good, doesn't make a lot of sense, a lot of it, in terms of what they're sort of saying. But strangely, by episode two or three, you've gotten past that. You're almost enjoying it in a weird kind of a way. But I think it would be very... Someone's got to have pitched that and someone's got to have bought it. It's funnily enough, you say Squid Game. I was reading an interview online earlier today with the creator of it, and the guy sort of like, you know, was really struggled. I mean, he didn't get a bonus or any performance bonus of any kind, and I don't think he made a huge amount of money out of it. I think the whole series was made for £15 million, okay? So there was quoted as pound in the article. So, you know, that's got to be sort of circa 22, 23 Australian. It's not a massive amount for 9 episodes of something that's produced on that scale, but of course costs are a lot cheaper in places like Korea than they are here. I think that just goes to prove to a lot of producers and also to a lot of platforms that the audience will lean into things that are really quite different, and that they don't mind being confronted. They don't mind being shocked a bit, you know? So, you know, like Hunger Games, when that came out, you know, there was a huge amount of sort of debate and discussion in and around that. This is a step on from again. You know, I'm waiting for the drama that comes out about over prisons that have got too many inmates. So let's invent games so we can eliminate them, because they're outcast to society anyway. You know what I mean? I mentioned that to my son the other day. He said, "Dad, write that down. It's a really good idea. It's a really good idea." But there will be a lot of others now that will come up. They'll be send in the clones, the usual kind of like, "Wow, that worked. We need to do something like that." So, I think it's of the moment. I think he probably had the guy that wrote it, the Korean gentleman that wrote it and created it and directed it. You know, he even said in the article he was changing storylines while they were shooting, which is kind of like, I mean, that just kind of like makes me panic just reading that. But the guy didn't make a huge amount of dough from it. I'm sure he was nowhere near expecting it to be the blockbuster, the most ever streamed show on Netflix so far. So that's, you know, I'm sure there'll be a season two, and I'm sure whatever he didn't make, he will make next time around, and he should. Good on him. But I don't know, you know, if someone had brought that to me, I'd just go, "Wow, that's a really wild concept, and I really don't know that I can sell that." That's what you tend to think first. You always look at, okay, what does the market want to buy? What is the audience looking for? What are the networks looking for? What's working elsewhere? What's evolving as trends? You know, what is the audience looking for? And often it's not about what I know, it's about what I can sell. So someone will bring... I'll get various things presented to me, and I'll just go, you know what? The market just doesn't want to buy that right now. It might want it in a year from now. It might have wanted it 12 months ago, but it doesn't want it today. Doesn't mean it's a bad idea. It just means I can't sell that today.
Squid Game,
I don't know if I could have sold it. I'm actually not sure 5 years ago that Netflix would have even bought it, mate.
All right. Well, speaking of selling, you've got John Ibrahim. Miniseries coming up. Can I ask you this? Have you got a network already in mind, or do you have to make it and then sell it to a network?
No, it's already been sold, Fletcher, to Paramount Plus. So Last King of the Cross is a 10-episode series that will launch on Paramount Plus in the second half of next year. It's all of the scripts are, you know, being written at the moment. There are 6 writers on board. I've already read 4 episodes. All the scripts will be delivered in December. We'll go into pre-production in February, start shooting in May of next year. It'll probably launch somewhere around September, depending on where Paramount want to place it. They may go later, but that's kind of the time frame. So it is already greenlit. It's Paramount Plus in Australia only, so it will go out on most likely on other networks and or other platforms internationally. I'm not sure yet. I'm only just concluding the agreement with the distributor, which is a big London-based distributor, UK-based.
Okay, so can I
it is happening.
Can I ask you? Yeah, I can't wait. I cannot wait. Can I ask you this? How do you finance it? Do you look for investors or?
Well, it's a combination, mate. Every single time that you, whether it's a film, whether it's a scripted series, you know.
Like this one, for example, the one about John Ibrahim.
Okay. Yeah, well, this one's predominantly funded by Paramount Plus first, then the rest of the world component, because Screen Australia will only fund beyond a certain level. So if your budget is beyond a certain level, you won't qualify for the funding. If it's a total buyout of the rest of the world outside Australia, and there isn't what we call a waterfall, a return into, say, a Screen Australia, then they won't fund you. So Screen New South Wales, we're only putting the funding submission in to the next round in mid-November. They will most likely be involved. Then it's Paramount Plus, and then through our distributor, which is Cineflix, it'll be international. So the international component makes up the other sort of third of the budget, if you like. So normally it's a case of, let's just say it's New South Wales, then it's Screen New South Wales, Screen Australia, the producer's offset, okay, which you get anyway, which is 30% now of your gross number. So every producer qualifies for producer's offset. So in our case, it's producer's offset, Paramount Plus, rest of the world, but most dramas will be state funding, federal funding, meaning Screen Australia, but you have to go through a submission process and be approved, which is extremely rigorous process. It takes probably 3 months just to actually get all the elements together for submission. Then your local broadcaster, then producers offset. I mean, seriously, you end up rattling cans at traffic lights at the end to try to get your budget together. So it's very challenging funding any major scripted project. You always start out with a number you'd like to get to and ultimately end up making it for what you can raise, what you can achieve.
We're chatting with Mark Fennessy. Two questions within one here. Maybe hard to ask because I didn't know we're getting you on as the mystery guest, but if you had to choose one Australian talent to make themselves a big name in the States or globally who they don't know yet, but you know they're on their way to being a big star, who's that? And who are we talking about as the Melbourne Cup winner this time next week, Mark?
Oh. Melbourne Cup winner. I couldn't tell you that at the moment. I think Jai Courtney is on his way. I really do think he's been in a number of things already, Australian actor. And Hugo Weaving's daughter, Samara, I think it is. I think it's his daughter. And seen her in a...
Yeah, she's in...
Nine
Perfect.
I think she's got a great future. She's largely, with great respect to her, she's largely unknown at the moment, but I think she will be she'll do well internationally. So there's a couple of examples for you. Melbourne Cup, couldn't tell you. At the moment, I actually won't even start thinking about that until Monday or Tuesday morning.
Have something on Charlie Rose each way.
I have not even seen the full field at the moment. So, don't know. Can't give you that one.
All right. Well, your phone's going off, Fano, so we're going to, I can hear it in the background. We're going to let you go. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. I'm going Twilight Payment. Just to let you know.
All right. I'll write that down. Twilight Payment.
Charlie Rose each way for me, Fano. Well done, mate. Great to chat.
All right. Good stuff. Thanks,
Fano.
Guys.